read from my last book and the new one, so that you are the first to get a preview of the new book that's going to be launched on June 9th. The last book, which is for sale here, is The Vows First, and it's a book of elegies. My husband died in 2001, and so this is my book for him. Called The Vows First. And I'll start with this poem, The Harvest. In my darkest moments, I am as dark as the North Atlantic. Great currents, cold and wind blow from me. I am the worst gale, trees ripping from the floor of Ballyconnell Woods, sands ripping at the eyes of determined strandwalkers near Ballynet. It is December, it is December, the brightest, the darkest time of year. The gales came in the year of 98, lightning struck, and the plugs in our house blew fire. It was nothing, no consequences, but interrupted sleep, still the same joy of Christmas morning, Anna and Ben opening presents, symbols of our love for them. Then late morning port with cousins by the harbor in the bitter wind. St. Stephen's broke warm and clear. We walked late, and after an hour, the sea mist rolled in. Family after family retreated from the beach. It is another December, the December near enough to the new millennium, and the little crib is below the tree. The angel holds her torch at the top. And something, say a love so deep in the family, a happiness beyond human proportion, is alive all over the house, all over Sophie's cottage. And it comes from dumbness, a condition of the human soul, a condition of Sophie, of our real Sophie who lived here and who is the goddess of wisdom, who smiles the smile of the Mona Lisa, who lives fully in the moment, and knows how fleeting the moment is, how to crack the dark, raw ore to reveal emerald spring light. It is December, it is December. You bring me toast and scrambled eggs. It is the brightest time of year, the darkest time. We are planning a walk. It is the morning of your bleed, and I am the friendly strand leaving a mark on your eyelid. How can you explain the randomness of lightning? I have been asked to bring my beloved before you. It is the harvest. Winds will blow. So there is the event, and then contemplation about my life with Jimmy, when I suppose then the rest, the death. So this poem is called The Ark. This is a wonderful book because I kind of lost its center in some ways, but it found one without me. It was sold, it was the book of the week in the English Independent on Sunday, and it's in fifth printing, because it was sold through the book club. So, I mean, it was an amazing book because, in a way, it's a kind of a rescue. It rescued me out of maybe the grief, the horror of the grief. I mean, my child then was only 11. So, I mean, just the horror of the coping with it all. I nursed him for 17 months at home, too. So, anyway, this poem is called The Ark, and it's thinking about my life with my husband. And home is that ark of childhood, a boat that shelters us from the storm, from tides and time that divide a family. Maybe this is the story of Noah and all his disconcerting tribe. The smell of the boat is of teak and pine resin. A mother has put an old pine dresser on board And there are photographs in brown frames of children captured for a minute in some true moon. The children shine as wet as the wettest day of summer. I am a child caught in a frame, and I am the mother, changed to that keeper of childhood, to what I am, a woman whose life holds its own solidity of form for a while. My life cradled by the wings of the circadian body, a body that will leave me soon enough, soon enough. How do I speak these things to my son and daughter? How do I tell them that when Tori suddenly appears from the mist of a Christmas walk, that distances and proportions disappear? That today, as I hold their hands and walk with my husband, I am also on my father's boat and heading home. All of us are on board, the whole arc of love. This poem is called The Cherry Tree. The setting is after my husband died. The garden cherry has its best crop yet, dear, and pink roses are climbing through dark boughs. Weather hasn't been mild enough to bring the chairs around to sit in the sun, soaking in the warmth, hidden from traffic, the noise, the phone, onlookers, uninvited guests. Did I write chairs? I mean a chair, a single chair. The ghost of your chair beside me, a ghost whiskey, a ghost hand running fingers through my hair. Your death has blurred my vision. You are in the corner of my eye, a rip in the fabric of what I know, the shadow of love, and not love itself. So I try to get a little bit more upbeat with this collection and then move on to the other. You do begin to move on. So I'll finish with three poems from this book and then go to my new book. This is called The Word Made Flesh. I was teaching the Retke poem, where the glass house is a boat enduring the storm. When the moth landed, I should have stopped talking and pointed the moth out, but couldn't. The moth was an angel of the afternoon, stopped for a moment between the cherry and the climbing rose. An emperor moth the size of my hand rested on the white wall of the cottage back garden. A great arc of sunlight caught the moth's wings. The eyes of the wings were flowing deep blue, almost indigo. Swirls of light made an illusion of spinning, the spinning earth then, in miniature, on the wings of a moth whose body, the color of sunset and of the night sky, is doomed as we to brief life, caught in the light of an afternoon, to be a sign for seasons, for days and years. And this is kind of, this poem is a homage, and it's about finding out you're alive again. So it's called Alive, Alive, Alive. The heron roams from the Danish ditch in the field. Its rusty legs, the wingspan greater than my height, the gray-tipped feathers 6 feet from the car, taking the air more gracefully than I have heard their flight described by poets. What pressures their bodies take. My child's favorite movie's hero says, life is pain, and we know how it is plagued by poverty and war, but the simple physical ecstasy as the heron gained height made me tremble the way I did when I first kissed my lover, taking in the feeling gratefully of the first spring heat, the sun blazing on yellow gorse and on a white strand, the black-backed gull wings a dark shadow on palest marum grass. I drove on, joy on wings, not expected, not past. I mean, to end with this and then start the new book with two poems based on the Odyssey. And this one is called Indwelling. And it's that section of the Odyssey where Odysseus stands at the door of the dead, and he drinks blood and calls up the dead to him. And this is me drinking the blood and calling up the dead to him. At the dark door of my dwelling, I made libations, poured ox blood into a basin the color of tree bark, and I held the knotted handle, the liquid therein that was red with life. I had arrived here with my wits about me and a belief in prayer. I summoned forth the dead, called forth that most ancient of seers, Tiresias, twin-sexed, left, wounded by the ancient powers, lover of signs and portents. Many came who were not called. My parents attended me, standing at either shoulder, at first not speaking. By the light of the vernal moon I saw many shadows, but I held them at bay by the force of my will alone. For what weapon avails against the dead? When Tiresias came, it was as if out of dark water. He leaned on a stick and drank from my dark vessel. What daughter breaks my peace, my endless journey round the sheer cliffs of time? You have too many questions, but you belong to two nations. Watch your back. Expect no help, save from one who loves you and from one you love. I say nothing of endings. It matters little. It is what we are born for. You will sit old-aged, writing in a garden by the sea. And then he left me, receding into the dark waters of time. Then came Sappho, limping a little, her dark eyes shining through that watery portal as she laughed to see me there and ran her ephemeral hand over my head. Many came after her, Dante and Dunn, Yeats and Kavanaugh, Lowell and Bishop, Frost and Merrill. Through the dark water, the light of words, better than magic to see things by. I felt a part of history. The long road of poems was before me. I was walking on the road, and it felt good to go along its shady avenues at my own pace. There was a sound of jazz coming through deep water, and shimmering came two shadows, and there was Bill with a worn smile who drank the dark liquid and spoke, "I died as I lived, and all I could do is all I did." He moved aside, and there the other stood, his shock of gray curls, his devil-may-care, my husband, guitar across his chest. I grasped and held the air, my arms swinging wildly each time I reached for him. Not now, no, not in this life again, dear. Your job is to live and to write, write well, do your work. He opened his arms as he had in life, blessing me and all that we had been. Into the waters of time, he faded. From behind my shoulders they came, mother and father. My father put on that tone he had with me, a man weary with wisdom and full of advice. You've learned in pain. Let your words help you now. Make the world you live in. My father always loved to have the last word. My mother didn't speak, but the sound of piano music sounded, and she turned to depart. A thin, dark cloud sped past the spring moon. I could see again into the dark garden and stone wall beyond. The chimeral water had withdrawn, and I was a woman alone at the dark door of her dwelling, my memory reaching back through nearly 50 years. I shut the door, headed down the long hallway of books. Voices of many of those I had seen through dark water whispering to me in the fading light. The new book. It's called St. Michael in Peril of the Sea. And that title comes from Montfort Michel, where I visited the pilgrims that can get drowned in the tidal flats while they make the pilgrimage out to Montfort Michel. So the pilgrims in the Middle Ages nicknamed it that. That's where the title comes from. And this, again, is the connecting poem to that last book. This is Penelope on the Suitors. And this talks about really a closure of part of my life, closure of that first MA in creative writing that was run from my house. I mean, I actually had teaching in my home as was my husband. So this is about that clearance. Penelope on the Suitors. My house, when it started, was full of the tokens of love. A bird that flew and sang uncaged with the song of a lark and of a wood thrush warbling in its throat. One of the suitors, it became such a frenzy of taking, took the bird, and when it flew straight home to me, there was no life left in the poor thing. My son was small, and I took to locking myself away in the inner room in what ceased to be my home. Women friends and those who worked for me took to gossip and sleeping with the guests, assorted politicians, minor poets, one good bard, and a bunch of thieves, God help me. When I began to sort what had been taken, my mind seized on parley and defense. I knew I could weave, and I wove. Athena and Arachne came to me in dreams. There they taught me how I might weave a web that would not end. Every night I wove, singing the secret chant until I counted 20 years. When I opened the door, I did not know him, for he was a mature man in his middle prime. If he was not the man I knew, still he was a husband. He assessed the turmoil, caught my son in his embrace, and cleared the hall. We got to know each other slow, and if the secret of our bed was passed on, or if indeed it is him, it does not matter. You can hear the olive wood tying out, the bed singing, home is the sailor, home from the sea. The suitors are gone, and I am clear. I am clear of it. Okay, a very different voice. This is for Garage McLaughlin, Northern Irish language poet reconteur.
He was here a year ago.
And it's very much in his style. Lunasa. I've got the end of summer blues. I've got the end of summer moving on blues. I've got the end of summer, not enough money to buy clothes blues. I've got the moving on, moving into rented accommodation blues. I've got the blues. I've got the end of summer, not knowing a soul blues. I've got the moving on, love and abeyance blues. I've got the end of summer blues. I've got the end of summer, leaving the graveside blues. I've got the end of summer, getting older blues. I've got the blues, the weather howling, storm engulfed, autumn coming blues. There is nothing for it because I have the end of summer, love and abeyance blues. I've got the blues, the monogloss, want to be on a beach in France blues. An end of summer, miss the poets, moving on blues. I've got the blues, I am playing Joni Mitchell's blue. I am sitting in my blue living room with the end of summer, moving on, getting older blues. So maybe finish with me?
Sure.
My late husband has a book called Energy to Burn. He has 13 books of poems, 4 plays, and 4 albums of songs. He played with Kieran Goss. I was really lucky, young poet, because I got to sing with Kieran Goss. So this is my answer to his Energy to Burn poem, which is very much very male in his early 40s, missing younger life home. And this is my answer, older than he was, both his energy to burn. The sea has power to wash away the years. It is fierce with light, blue green water, thunder and foam, hurling down the long strand of tremor. Yesterday, a small dolphin, flesh torn and gnawed, lay dead on the strand where I walked. Weary with life, I understand now why my mother would call me away from that element that swept her and two of my kindergarten sisters out a mile, her powerful, desperate tread keeping them all afloat until the Coast Guard lifted the three of them from deadly cold West Atlantic waters, where I swam too. I swam until brine burned tongue and lips. I could fly in that element and leapt in the waves and glided, ignoring the terror of sharks, ignoring the power of the ocean tides and currents, fierce in that water, as children must be fierce. In the office, my feet still tread sand. I walk beside that element, my blood in the same salt balance, the storm turquoise of swelling water, its white churned crash, alive with energy to burn. One of the horrible things when you don't have the book yet and it's manuscript, I can never work with pagination. Sky catcher. This is about there's a little bird called the flycatcher, but it's not about that. You came to me this morning, desire drove your will, and our love was urgent. In the brightness of day, there was no pretense of tenderness. I knew what you needed, and I gave it freely. The flycatcher and the clematis at my door feed her brood. It is a necessary thing, for her nature is to give. Soon the young will fledge and depart. When your car pulled out from the driveway, the bird sat, mouthful of flies on the dead bush, her head's movement checking what would watch and find her nest. Nothing could stop my heart from breaking, my ears thrumming with the sound of tires on gravel. And then I finished with a poem called The Royal Canal. It's three sections. I did a thing that was probably crazy. I decided that I needed to take a 40-foot barge out on a canal. And I'm not young. And so I had a friend with me. We did it. It was probably the most terrifying thing I've ever done in my life, but we did it. I mean, there are things like, I always sailed, and so I'm not afraid, but, you know, the sailing, you've got docks. With the canal boat up the Royal Canal, I had to take 25-feet leaps with ropes and pegs and tie the boat. It was an amazing experience, and I'm glad I did. And then, so. The Royal Canal. Lock. The worst fear I have is traveling through a grave, the dark in which somehow your eyes still see the light. We came to the gates, and you left the barge with lock key to open those gates for me. The gates held shut against me, the gates where Odysseus summoned his dead to Bresby. And there I was at the gates, middle-aged, and driving Charon's boat across the Styx. What a wild panic. The barge steering itself against my will. You were straining with the machinery to let me through. How can I let you down? Anger at my fear fed me now. So I mastered the barge, drove into the lock, and held there while the gates gonged shut behind me. Celebration. Thomastown Harbor, mellow, warm spring evening on the Royal Canal with you. blackthorns and willow blossoming on the bank. This is the warmest spring that I remember. A canal both you and me, hard physical work, tired and rewarded by experience. The small, dark, serried moorhens in their nests, mooring sometimes au sauvage in nature, Thoreau and Walden Pond, this journal and notes of how I love you. The dawn chorus of birds with many voices, so many voices for us to hear and hear again. Here is our journey with a purpose. You and I on the canal that moves on, moves slowly toward you and slowly toward me. Swan alone. A swan without a mate followed a barge along the canal. She was a harbinger of what it is to live without. For now she loved the barge and followed its movements. Following first from a distance and behind, I watched the growing light gather round her whiteness. Then in an ecstasy of wings, she passed low over the boat, her curving body and the audible beat of wings 10 feet above me. Me, the girl inside, was caught by tears for you, my lost mate. And here I was on the barge with a man I love, who leaves me mostly on my own. But now, coming from Westmeath, Thomastown, through Hyde Park, the Cap of Bog, the swan floated in the light of a rising clear-red sun, burning the frost to a ghosting mist, leading us on to the hill of Downs, and then rising, she was gone, returned to her own mysteries.